Welcome to Reading the Grid with Erin and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Max Verstappen claimed a commanding pole-to-flag victory at the 2025 Azerbaijan Grand Prix at Baku, securing his sixth career Grand Slam by converting pole, leading every lap, and setting the fastest lap. The triumph cut his deficit to Oscar Piastri by 25 points, now at 69, and to Lando Norris by 19, now at 44 points, reigniting the conversation that he may have an outside chance at a driver's title this year. Red Bull, as a team, had a fantastic outing, with Yuki Tsunoda finishing in P6, just behind the Racing Bulls of Liam Lawson, who outqualified in a very unexpected P3. The other Racing Bulls of Isaac Hadjar was also in the points, although in P10. McLaren had the worst race of the season, with Oscar Piastri crashing out spectacularly in the first lap after crashing out in qualifying, and Lando Norris was unable to move up from his disappointing qualifying in P7, which was not helped by another slow pit stop, which was crucial in his one-stop race.
Ferrari were at the back of points positions after the flashes of brilliance in FP2. Which did not materialize in qualifying, with Lewis Hamilton not even making it to the last part of qualifying, and Charles Leclerc crashing out in Q3, which had them start the race out of position and end in P8 and P9, respectively. Overall, this was a great race for the rookies. Kimi Antonelli reversed his fortunes by qualifying his teammate, George Russell, and ending up in P4, just one step lower than his best finish of the season so far. In fact, four of the six rookies out-qualified their more seasoned teammates, and three ended up in the points.
Carlos Sainz had a dream run to the podium for Williams. He qualified in P2, which was in stark contrast to his teammate, Alex Albon, who crashed into the wall during Q1 and qualified in P20. Even though he downplayed his ability to stay on the podium, Sainz managed to only lose one place and stayed one step lower than the driver who just happened to be the last driver to have matched his achievement for Williams, George Russell, who ended up in P2. Speaking of Carlos Sainz, Ina, who won your heart in Baku?
It had to be the cats of the paddock. And the star was dubbed Ferrari, as in fur, the chief podoc officer, which is a very cute kitty that snuck into the Petta Club, which usually costs thousands of dollars for humans to get in. And then he was carried out and snuck back again. And he just kept making his way back and back. And I thought that was adorable. There was a video of Yuki Tsunoda running away from a cat who looked about 20th of his size, and George Russell patting a cat, which may have brought him good luck. But in terms of drivers, the top five, with honorable mention for Yuki Tsunoda in P6, have the best case for stealing my heart, because pretty much the rest of the grid disappointed. Of those, Max Verstappen, Carlos Sainz, Liam Lawson had a great qualifying performances, especially in Q3. And although they drove great races, their track positions helped them stay at the top. Kimi Antonelli finally showed form by out-qualifying his teammate and ultimately finishing where he started. This was his best result in a while, but not even the best this season, so I cannot give it to him. The only one who had an arc throughout the weekend and made up places onto the podium is George Russell. We heard reports that he was sick with a respiratory infection, confirmed by his horrendous radio from practices on Friday, that sounded so bad that you wondered why he was not in the hospital instead of a racetrack. Sky Sports kept showing Bottas in the Mercedes garage, and it made me wonder if he would have to step in because of how dreadful it seemed Russell felt. even though he still drove the car incredibly well, he ended up in P3 in FP2. More on that practice session in a bit. He did not do any interviews until Sunday, and even though he qualified in the top five, which apparently was an achievement this weekend from the top teams, he was outqualified by his teammate for only the second time this year. In the race, he had a little scuffle with Antonelli on the first lap. Thankfully, did not lead to any contact, but there was a radio message where George just went on a cursing rant, and so the message was just bleep, 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 bleep. Russell lost the position to Tsunoda during that scuffle. He managed to come back and then did not put a foot wrong in the race. He started on the preferred strategy, which is to go long on the hard tires and then switch to the mediums. And then he actually suggested to his team how long he should go, and the team listened. Are you paying attention, Ferrari? So overall, I would say it would have to be George. Aaron, is it Carlos Sainz for you?
It's a toss-up between Carlos Sainz and Max. My hang-up on Carlos is it is very painful for me, while I'm very happy for him, to think that Carlos in a Williams got on a podium before Lewis in a Ferrari.
Do you think it says more about Ferrari than about Lewis Hamilton?
Yes, because their strategy, which I know we'll get into, was such a debacle this weekend. I almost feel like they truly are sabotaging our drivers because, based on how practice was going, I would have thought one of them would be on pole and the other would be P2 and they would have a front row lockout. I thought there was honestly a chance for great things to happen. And I
We
can't
will
wait to talk
definitely.
about qualifying because that 2 hour stint of was nothing but bananas. I literally kept singing Gwen Stefani's head, "This shit is bananas," BANANAS in my head the whole time. And by the sixth red flag, I was just like, well, this is just a very good theme song to describe this 2 hours of qualifying.
I agree with you that, but I just want to go back. I know we're going to touch on Ferrari, but after the same thing happened in Monza, where they were 1-2 at a qualifying session, I'm sorry, at the practice session, and then dropped the ball in qualifying, you still had hope.
I
You have a lot of
did.
hope, Pam.
I
You are a true tifosi.
I'm also, this is my rookie year. I'm cheering for Ferrari, so maybe I haven't learned all of the painful lessons just yet. But Carlos to literally qualify P2, I know Williams is making a resurgence. This has been such a difficult year for him because Albon has consistently outperformed him, outqualified him. I think Alex had like 70 points coming into this race. Carlos had 15 or 16, and he more than doubled in one race what he has been able to do in an entire year. Seeing the tear in his eye when he was getting out of the car, I mean, it was a big deal for him to get that podium in Williams. I remember watching Russell get his podium in Williams after 3 long years, and the team is in much better shape. So it's really hard not to say it's anyone but Carlos, other than the fact he got his podium before Lewis, and that is just a hard pill for me to swallow. Max, I mean, the guy can do no wrong. He truly is the best driver on the grid.
I agree. It's hard to doubt it. And this was a really amazing weekend from him on a track that he doesn't usually do well. It's the one track where Sergio Perez outperformed him.
Right.
And I think it's very apt that he's now the only other driver other than Sergio Perez who won this track twice.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he was channeling his inner Perez.
Well, now that we know who won your heart, who broke your heart?
Feel like there are so many candidates every week. This week in particular is not short of any. Obviously, I'm going to have to throw into the mix Ferrari strategy, which seems to live on this list. Ferrari strategy, the Haas drivers. Let's see. I don't know. Literally, the list could go on and on and on. You could blame the wind, the wind tunnels, the circuit. Piastri was stunned.
Well,
I
that
don't
is
really.
who broke my heart.
Oh, man, let's talk about that. I don't have a clear winner because I feel like there are so many.
Yeah,
But
there's.
Oscar totally caught me off guard. I did not see that one coming. Not on my bingo card.
Well, I have to say, even though he is definitely individually is so striking by how horrible his weekend was, I would say McLaren as a whole gets to experience this because it's just so he had an issue in practice. I think they managed to fix it. And so he got some practice in during that one practice session. But that was already a bad start, which, okay, things happen and it wasn't entirely his fault. However, he kept hitting the walls. He kept finding them. He kept hitting them. And you just knew that at one point, probably during a session that was more consequential than a practice session, he was going to crash, especially after Lando Norris seemed to have crashed and didn't look that bad, but his suspension was broken. And that was the end of that practice session for him. So he finally did crash in qualifying. And it was so insane to see. So this was, he was the one who caused the sixth red flag, which did end up being the record breaking red flag because I think the record up to that point was five red flags. And I believe it was set in Brazil qualifying, which was also insane. But at least there was like a lot of rain and more understandable conditions
It was a
why.
dry track with a lot of wind, a
Well,
little bit of rain in
there was a little bit
Q3.
spitting. And I have to say, I think the changeable conditions really helped Carlos Sainz get up to P2 because he set his time right before the conditions changed.
Right.
And we saw in Hungary, like that's how Leclerc got his pole. So I'm not gonna, so there were extenuating circumstances, but the fact that Leclerc hit the wall in the same session, and I was still recovering from that, and then to see Piastri in the wall, that was shocking. And I thought, okay, he got it out of the system. He actually had a very he maintained his poise and he insisted that he could see a way forward, although he admitted that winning was ambitious. And now, knowing what happened with hindsight, that statement is telling. But anyway, so he started in P9. And I remember after watching the aerial view of all the cars go by, I just see Juan Papaya. So I kept thinking, what happened to Norris? Because I just assumed that if something happens on the start, it's got to be Lando Norris.
Not
And
this
then,
time.
nope, the timing tower showed Piastri last. So I was insanely confused. And just when I thought, okay, maybe he can recover, obviously, he's not going to make it on the podium, but he could still be in the points. And that could be something to hang on to. He puts it in the wall. And that was so insane coming from Oscar Piastri, who rarely makes mistakes, rarely makes catastrophic mistakes. And that gets compounded when we found out that he jumped the start, which
I was
is.
so surprised to see him move, and he moved a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's why he panicked
Right.
and broke, and that
Yeah.
whole anti-stall issue caused him to get to the end of the grid. And he got a penalty, which was a 5 second penalty. And if nothing else comes out of this weekend, this was the only shining grace, is that since the penalty was awarded after his crash, so I thought it would carry on to as a grid penalty for the next race. It
Me
didn't.
too, for Singapore. It's not correct.
It's not. So the something new. So see, every race will learn something new. This is what I learned. It's that apparently it has to be a penalty of more than 5 seconds. And that's the penalty that carries. If you can't serve it during the race that the penalty was given, then it becomes a grid penalty in the next race. Since this was just a 5 second penalty, it's not carried over to the next race. I'm just surprised that he's done so poorly on street tracks this year. Although, of course, he got P3 in Monaco, but I felt it was pretty bad there too because he kept hitting the walls as well. Although he kind of got it together for the race. And the next race is another street circuit. And then we also have Las Vegas, which I think will be a trial for him. But hopefully he will find something to reclaim his dominant form. Otherwise, either Lando or Max will have a chance to win the championship, which I thought was his for the taking.
Oh, I thought this was his completely. And it's wild to me. He won last year, and then he was the only car to not finish this year. Talk about a 180.
It was atrocious. Like, there's no excuse because
No.
again, every session he kept getting worse and worse.
And then
But
Lando didn't even capitalize on it.
exactly, because I couldn't believe how much Lando Norris underperformed. However, I have to give him a little grace because I feel the McLaren team is to blame for some of the questionable calls, like sending him on the final run in the first position where you know probably not going to get the best time. Although I still think the fact that he hit the wall during that run did not help. Although he claimed, oh, it was nothing. It was something. And that could have pushed you a couple of places ahead. And you could have been in George Russell's position and ended up in second place, which would have given you so many more points between you and Oscar. And then he, of course, had the most horrendous pit stop. And I just couldn't believe it.
I saw a meme where the radio must have said, Yuki, Lando had a slow pit stop switch. And he's like, wrong team.
Yes, that was hilarious. And it was so funny because they're like, because there were a lot of, funny exchanges about, well, who's he going to switch with now? Nobody else works for McLaren. But it's been actually more often than not, he got really poor pit stops. Somewhere I saw the stat of it's like four of the last five have been really bad. So I don't know what's going on. And they have to fix it. But in any
Interesting.
case, I just don't think Lando Norris himself was aggressive enough. He made too many mistakes. And I just think at the end of the day, he should have taken over, she shouldn't overtaken Tsunoda and Lawson. And the fact that he couldn't, which again, I mean, they both Tsunoda and Lawson were great at defending their positions, which was,
They both did a phenomenal job this weekend. I was
I was
so
going to.
surprised that Leclerc and Nort, the whole DRS train behind them was the most annoying thing to watch.
It always is, but I think it's still impressive because Lawson, for all intents and purposes, is still a rookie, and Tsunoda had a horrific year so far. So this was good on them, but I almost feel it was also Lando just not risking at all. And to tell you the truth, at that point, when you're seventh, like just risk it. Fine, you also DNF. Big whoop. But at this point, I think you should have tried something. That's just my opinion.
Well, should we talk about Ferrari?
I have to. My frustration can be summed up in one example from this horrific weekend. They could not even execute team orders correctly. So during the second stint, when Leclerc was not making any progress overtaking Norris on hard tires, he was asked to switch positions with Lewis Hamilton, who was on fresher medium tires because they were on split strategies, which is something that I actually commend them for. So Hamilton was unable to pass Norris. And on the last lap, at the worst possible moment, I think it was way too late, he was told, hey, we want you to switch the positions back. He tried to slow down, not enough, and they ended up in the same positions that they were before the team orders were enacted. I have to give Lewis credit. He said it was his fault, which I didn't think it was entirely his fault, but he said it was his fault. It wasn't kind of wrong again. I think Leclerc could care less because at the end of the day, P8, P9 doesn't really matter.
No, I mean,
But
Leclerc's ahead of him anyway by enough points in the drivers' championship. I don't think that's not the most unsettling issue I would say the drivers have with the team.
no, but it just illustrates everything. Like, this is the one thing both driver would have did not care, so they would have done willingly. But you managed to mess that up. And so on top of all of that, so that I think is a perfect consolation, like how we fumble everything. So they split the strategies, but again, and Lewis was on a preferred strategy, but they still pitted Leclerc too early. Then, of course, in qualifying, they messed up Hamilton by leaving him out on soft tires and
And
not
not
enough
enough fuel.
fuel,
That was
which is
the
not the
thing.
first time that had happened.
I know, it just leaves me speechless.
Right. And the only positive is that their pit stops were still on point, and their weekend overall was not worse than McLaren. Yay.
Yeah, but you had Mercedes chunk down on points. Is Ferrari still two in constructors, or did
No, it's third. It's now. So the difference was before
it was like
this
20?
20. Now it's
Okay.
four in Mercedes' favor.
Ugh.
But my point is, they deserve it. I'm
Well,
sorry. They
yes,
don't.
after this weekend, they definitely do.
Even before this weekend, I think the only reason they were second, I don't think they were the second best car. I think they just had two very good drivers. And Mercedes could not rely on Kimi Antonelli to give them points. So, yeah. So I don't think they deserve second. And Leclerc, I'm sorry, that was a horrible performance. His crash in qualifying was shocking. And I actually thought there was redemption in store for him in the race. And towards the first part of the race, he justified somewhat because he passed Norris on the restart for safety car. But then he could not pass Tsunoda or Lawson. And he lost out to Norris when Norris was on fresher tires. And actually, the strategy that McLaren used to pit Norris did not work out because of, again, this pit stop. So I actually don't think the team should have switched them back. I felt like Hamilton should have been in front. This was a dismal weekend. It was just really, really bad. The only silver lining for Leclerc's performance was that Ferrari confirmed that he had ERS recovery issue, and that cut his maximum power by 2 kilowatts. So there was some technical reason for why he seemed slower in the race than I expected him to be. Did not help with crashing and qualifying. Maybe if he didn't, he
No,
wouldn't have the issue.
I was really surprised to see him crash in qualifying. I was stunned that Hamilton didn't have a chance at another run because of their strategy to get him into Q3. Like I said before, I was so optimistic based on the practice sessions, especially FP2. That they were going to be so much stronger in this race, and the fact that they weren't, it's so discouraging. It's so discouraging. It was heartbreaking watching Hamilton get out of the car, leave his helmet on after his weight check-in, and just go past sights and head straight for the garage. Like I hate this for him, the team. I mean, all around. They have not put together a great weekend in a
This was, again, abysmal. I think the cameraman who framed Carlos Sainz with Hamilton walking in the background knew what he was doing.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he did. I did, appreciate they got the Smooth Operator song on and Carlos had quite the celebration. It just is very painful and a difficult pill to swallow that Hulkenberg made it on the podium, Antonelli, Hadjar, and now Carlos, all before Hamilton and a Ferrari. I thought
Well,
for
I have to
sure we would, other than the sprint race, have him on a podium.
say, I would put Kimi Antonelli a little bit aside just because that weekend Mercedes was the best car. So chances are
Fair.
he should have gotten the point. The other three, I wanted to ask you a question about that.
Sure.
Which podium you think is, I don't want to say most deserved, but more impressive? Hülkenberg, Hadjar, or Carlos Sainz in the Williams?
I'm very torn between Hadjar and Carlos in the Williams.
Really? You don't
Even
think?
more than Hülkenberg. A lot of that was timing and situation, even though he did have a great drive because he was towards the back of the grid when he landed P3, in all fairness to him. I don't
I
know.
think
They're
luck.
all really quite a story to tell because it was over 200 races for Hülkenberg. It was like the longest ever before anyone, a driver had been on the podium. Hadjar, the way he started his rookie season, crashing out turn one in Australia by turn three, and then to end up on a podium, such a great, you know, Cinderella story. Carlos and the Williams might take it, though. I don't know. I mean, a rookie, it's hard to pick because it is his rookie year. Hulkenberg, the veteran. Carlos going from a Ferrari to a Williams.
I definitely would put Carlos third. Hadjar, yes, he's a rookie. So any rookie reaching a podium, I think, is a great achievement. But I think we've seen that, especially with Liam Lawson being in P5 this race, that Racing Bulls are not a bad car. And obviously they're not as good as Red Bull, but they're up there. And especially this track really suited them. Well, this track, Hadjar didn't do so well. But whenever Hadjar got his P3, I think it was Dutch Grand Prix. So, yeah. So the fact that he ended up third, while very impressive, there are other factors that make it make sense. What does not make sense is Hulkenberg in the Sauber. Because no matter what you want to say, Sauber is much worse than this Williams and this Racing Bulls. And the fact that Hulkenberg have not gotten a podium at any other time in his career, I just feel that is more impressive. For now, we still have some races left.
And I'm really hoping one of them is a Hamilton on the podium.
I hope so too. I'm just not that optimistic.
Oh, my hopium's diminishing by the second. But we didn't talk about Williams, if you want to read the rest of the grid.
Well, I think we talked a lot about Carlos Sainz.
You want to talk about Albon?
Yes, but before we do that, I just want to say, so two things I thought was very cute about his weekend. One is during the first practice, he ended up in Alpine pit box, which I thought was so hilarious because...
That was funny.
Yeah, and it's funny because he just stands there and you see the mechanics with a very clear insignia of Alpine just telling him, like, and then, like, his engineer comes on and he's like, yeah, you just still have to restart and keep going. So that was cute. The other cute thing was that he had a unicorn sticker on his helmet that Max Verstappen noticed in the cool down room. Like, that man, like, his attention to detail is impressive.
Well, did you watch the video of the little girl who sent the request? That was the most adorable thing I have seen.
Well, in the words of George Russell, now you have to have it on every race,
and it's his good luck charm.
It is. So that was very wholesome. So that,
well, wait until Lando gets Patrick's video, because Patrick has informed me that he wants to send Lando a present, and he needs to send him a video message, because Patrick for his birthday got the Lego McLaren to build, and he built it for Lando, and he is so proud of himself.
He should be. And I think that would be adorable. Don't know how Lando would wear it on his helmet, but he'll
well,
sure
he'll
find
that's
a way.
Not the present he wants to give him. But he, this morning before school, he made me turn the race on again to watch Lando.
This race?
Yeah, before school.
He knows what happened to Lando in this race.
Well, he was very upset about his teammate Oscar Piastri too. He goes, "If my drivers are not doing great, where is my Kimi Antonelli?"
Well, his Kimi Antonelli came through, so not a bad pick.
He did. So he was much happier with Kimi Antonelli than he was with Lando or Oscar yesterday. You know, from the mouth of a 4-year-old. But.
Exactly. So he knows what he's talking about. I just want to highlight in terms of Albon, he did move up from, well, he started 19th because we're going to get to the disqualification and qualifying because, you know, why not? But he started in P19 and he ended up P13, but it really was all undone in his crash and qualifying, which completely took him out.
That was so early in Q1 too.
Well, this was the first red flag. So by the sixth, I wasn't really that concerned about the first red flag that we had.
No, definitely not.
And then in the race, for needless reason, he collided into Puro Franco Colapinto. And I think this was, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the first collision in a while where Albon was like, yeah, it was me. Like,
I know.
I can't blame
him. He's usually a lot cleaner. Although I will say, seeing him come down to cheer for Carlos when he was up on the podium was phenomenal of him. I thought, what a team player, what a great teammate. I can't think of another time I've seen a driver do that.
Charles Leclerc came to Sainz's first podium with Ferrari.
Oh, well, that's really sweet. I wonder if he'll do the same for Lewis.
I'm sure he will. Well, my dream is he's also on the podium, so he doesn't have to.
Well, there you go. That would be even better. One, two, two, three, whatever. Just both of them up there would be really good. Maybe Brazil. So you mentioned a disqualification and qualifying. Should we talk about Haas?
It was Ocon. Not that he qualified that high. I think so. He was out in Q1. So already we're on the
I
edge.
think he went from 19 to 20 or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah. So
what was it?
He was in P19. So, yeah. So he went from P19 to 20. But the fact that, again, there was a design flaw, quote unquote, that caused his car to be disqualified. And, you know, the funny memes and stories about how, like, well, that's why Ollie Bearman crashed in Q2. So that
Two.
they couldn't scrutineer his car and find the same issue.
Oh, man. That's...
Yeah, but that's pretty much, like, their qualifying was nothing to write home about. And
there
Bearman
was their race.
Well, Bearman, my point is, like, Bearman could have qualified so much higher if it wasn't for his stupid crash, which was his fault. And then, yeah, he made little progress, but he ended up in P12, which was, again, outside the points. At least it's not his least favorite place in the world, P11.
We talked a little bit about Racing Bulls, and having them and Red Bull, all four drivers in the top 10, was pretty impressive. And he is probably my least favorite driver on the grid, but Liam Lawson did not put a foot wrong this weekend.
Is he weighing you?
No, not even close.
What
No.
does he need to do?
There is no chance of wooing at all, ever.
I believe you. Well, so Aston Martin had a poor weekend all around. Lance Stroll made it out of Q1. I almost, because again, Q1 had three red flags, and none of them were caused by Lance Stroll, and Lance Stroll made out of Q1. So I thought we were cooking with something. Nope. Alonso started in P11, which was not great, and then ended up P17. So it was a very abysmal race. But the one thing is, again, learning new things. So we all know that Fernando Alonso manages Bortoleto, who's in a Sauber. But who manages Alonso? Aaron, do you know?
I actually don't know.
Oh, I'm glad you're sitting down. It's Flavio Briatore. You cannot make this up.
No, you can't.
Right?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, you definitely learn something new every weekend. Wow.
So speaking of Alpine.
Could you imagine how pissed off Flavio must have been this weekend?
That's what I'm getting to. Because, cool. I mean, the cars are horrible. Because let's not forget that they ended up the last two cars they finished and the only two cars that were lapped this race. So this is how bad the cars
that
are.
Was so bad.
But
so
in
qualifying,
bad. Not only did they both did not make it out of Q1, which is fine. I mean, you expect it with this car. What's insane is towards the end of the qualifying, Gasly went off, but into the runoff area. And literally like a second later, Colapinto comes flying into the wall. Then Sky Sports showed Briatore, and you can see the anger, the complete, you know,
what the F?
Just, like it was WTF
steam.
All over. It was steam.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, right before the race, well, maybe not before the race, but this weekend, Briatore confirmed that the only two drivers they are looking at for next year in the second seat, because Pierre Gasly was confirmed last weekend, is Colapinto and Paul Aaron, who's their current reserve driver. And then Colapinto decides to make a case for himself and do that. So not to be outdone. So in the race, and I'm not sure what happened, because to tell you the truth, I just know Alpine sucks. So until Brazil, I'm not really paying attention to where they are. But I saw him pop up at P13. And literally what seemed to me just a couple of laps later, Alex Albon, who's towards the end, was plowing into him. So I don't know how Colapinto lose those positions before he even got to Albon. But then Albon plows into him, ruined, I think he damaged his front wing. So in any case, that was all she wrote for poor Frank Colapinto. The only thing I think he can hold on to is that he technically out-qualified Gasly. But it's just, it was awful. I think the only other person who had the worst weekend was poor Jack Doohan. If we go into Sauber, then it was a very anonymous race. Bortoleto made it out of Q1 and out-qualified Nico Hülkenberg. Hülkenberg, he was one of the drivers who crashed in qualifying and caused a red flag. Shocker. And then he ended up in P18. I don't know what it is about Hülkenberg. He got that podium and he just is not showing up. His qualifying is completely fallen off this entire year. So now we can turn to our segment of Words of Wisdom, named after Charles Leclerc, and highlighting interesting quotes heard around the paddock, in the media, and throughout the broadcast. So this was said, I think, in advance of the weekend, but I thought it was very interesting. And this is Esteban Ocon talking about Max Verstappen. "I see a lot of similarities between Max and me. On the track, Max and I both enjoy a fierce way of racing. I've always loved our battles on the circuit, but as a person, Max and I are very different. I don't want to go into the details about that."
I'm a little perplexed by this because I cannot remember on track Max and Ocon battling it out.
Unless you count those times that Ocon drove into him.
Again, I would not consider that battling it out. I'm not quite sure I follow Ocon's line of thinking here.
Well, we all know he has a little bit inflated sense of himself. Oh, Brazil last year when Max overtook him. Does that count as battling?
Maybe. Maybe in his mind. Could be. All right. Well, fascinating, Esty Bestie.
But what are the details about the differences between them as people?
I don't know. Max seems to be like a very blunt, upfront, no bullshit kind of guy. And
I'm just saying, Esty Bestie has a lot to explain. He's not going into what happened with Pierre Gasly now. He's not going into details. I'm telling you, his tell-all is going to be a very juicy one.
Ooh.
So then I have two quotes from Lewis Hamilton. So one is about his longevity in F1, and I think, Aaron, you're going to like it. "I have no intention of leaving anytime soon, and I'm very happy that Fernando is still here because it means he's older than me. I'm going to continue until he turns 50. So he means Fernando Alonso, so that would be 5 more years.
I would love to see that. Only if he and Ferrari can get into a groove and start gelling. I like him on the grid. This has been a challenging year.
It
a building
is.
Year.
Very
I don't
much
know what you call this year.
Welcome to Ferrari year. So
yeah, this is his initiation period is quite brutal.
I agree. So then he's talking about his car collection. And he said, "I don't have any cars. I got rid of all my cars. I'm more into art nowadays."
I was a little surprised by this one, especially one of his Ferraris that he sold that I saw him say, "I'd actually buy that one back because it is a piece of art." So why he sold it to begin with, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a mystery.
I like art. That can be one of our conversations, Lewis, whenever you're ready to chat. We can talk about art.
I was going to say, I have a classical art degree. I can be your art advisor, Lewis. Just give me a call.
There you go, Ina. Way to pitch.
Mm-hmm. Listen, anything that works. So Fernando Alonso also talked about his retirement plans. If 2026 is bad, there's a chance I carry on another year to finish with a good taste in my mouth. If the car is good, 2026 will probably be my last year. With Alonso, I'm just curious what you think about if the 2026 car is good and it's his last year, Max Verstappen and Aston Martin 2027?
I think it's going to be Aston or Mercedes. I still say Mercedes, but Aston does make a good case.
All right. Well, speaking of the car that Max is currently in, this is what Isaac Hedger has to say about it. I'd rather be in Chinese F4 than get demoted to Red Bull.
Ouch.
Well, he's getting demoted to Red Bull
Well,
for
yes, I
sure.
don't think he has much of a choice. He's the only one that makes sense to go into the Red Bull. Who would have thought at the beginning of the year that Racing Bulls would be the stronger car and going to Red Bull would be a demotion?
Well, that's the thing. After Baku, is it a demotion? I mean, they're getting up there. And they now have two wins in a row,
I
which
know, but
Max hasn't
part of
had
that
since.
is Max. Max is just so good.
But Yuki is P6, which is higher than Hadjar in
But
a
I think
racing bull.
qualifying was such a debacle. It totally put the grid out of place.
Hadjar qualified in P8. That's not too far from Yuki.
Fair.
So I actually
Eh.
think he might have taken this back if he didn't say it before the race.
Maybe, yeah, that definitely wouldn't age well.
This was one of my favorite exchanges. I mean, it's horrible because they both disappointed me, but I thought it was funny. So this was before the race. There was a group of them, but Oscar Piastri told Charles Leclerc, "I saw you in the wall and thought, all right, that's a good idea."
Oh, they're being funny.
That's the thing. I thought that meant
F1
they got
humor, but
it out of their system.
I mean, if you can't make fun of yourself over something like that, then I mean,
Who can you make fun
what
of?
else can you do at that point, you know?
And finally, so we talked about how Alex Albon was incredibly gracious in supporting Sa Carlos Sainz as his teammate for getting his first podium. I just want to say that George Russell, feeling as horribly and looking like death warmed over, also in his post-race interview, managed to mention that Kimi Antonelli got fourth, which was impressive, and also that he's so happy for Williams that Sainz got a podium. So class acts all around.
I did notice that, and you can definitely tell George was sick because he like walked up to the team and gave the most pitiful looking high fives all around. That was the most like underwhelming P2 celebration I think I've seen from a driver.
Well, first for Leclerc, so there was this radio when after he crossed the finish line, he actually asked where did Carlos end up, and when he was told on the podium, he said good for him.
Aww.
But then he elaborated, and that love fest was just great. I'm really happy for him. I mean, obviously we are traveling to basically all the races together, so we've had time to talk, and he's been so unlucky since the beginning of the year, and I don't think it was ever a lack of speed or whatever. I think it was more of a fortune thing, which luckily today he overcame, and I'm very happy to see him on the podium.
Aww. Well, they had a little bit of an adventure traveling home.
They did. So he did mention they traveled to all the races together. Wow. Apparently, their private jet had to make an emergency landing or get diverted due to weather. And it was interesting because all the other jets who left before or after them were fine. It was just they ended up with the best weather possible. And I'm being sarcastic. So obviously, their luck just is not working. So they ended up in Italy renting a van and Carlos Sainz driving them to Monaco. And it's hilarious because Leclerc posted this video showing what they were doing, and people blew up the picture of the speedometer to make sure like how fast were they going. Apparently it was 10 kilometers per hour over the speed limit, which I think is Okay, in
That's
Italy,
reasonable.
I think that's why Carlos travels with Charles, so that if they're stuck in Italy, he'll always like Ferrari driver.
You have two F1 drivers on a road trip. I just can only imagine how fun that must have been.
Yeah.
Well, let's spell the grid where we can dish out some of the off-track drama and behind the scenes. So, leading into Baku, we did find out that the race was extended through 2030. And our second favorite, lead favorite villain of the paddock, who's no longer on the grid, Christian Horner, officially left Red Bull with quite a substantial severance package and will have the ability to return to F1 next year.
Well, he did say if somebody wants to leave or somebody's made to leave, it's all about negotiating the out clause. I mean, I think he deserves that money because he really did make Red
20 years.
Bull.
I mean,
Yeah.
yes.
And I just think the worst punishment for him is to see Red Bull doing so well without him.
Oh, it's like they did not even miss a beat, and they're thriving with him not being there.
And I'm sure it's very painful for him, but I have to say, we did lose some entertainment because I can just imagine knowing how he feels about Zak Brown, McLaren, just the sound bites that he would have given us.
Well, I just think Drive to Survive is going to have to figure out how to creatively fill the void.
Or they can have him as a talking head because you know he's not afraid to tell it like he thinks it is. And be snarky and funny. And now that he's been booted out of Red Bull, he can dish the dirt.
This is also true.
This race weekend delivered a lot of heartbreaks and the longest qualifying session of the year, longer than all of the races so far, with the record 6 red flags. Not the kind of record we want to break anytime soon. I feel like just putting it out there gives Leclerc and Piastri too many ideas of like, okay, let's break this record next time. No, we're done. It created a lot of joy for the midfield teams that should fuel them to future success and left a couple of front-running teams, especially McLaren, with the need for redemption in the next race. This year has not produced the same unpredictability as last year when we did not know which team would come out on top from weekend to weekend. After this race, Max Verstappen asserted himself decisively on the track that is not considered his best and is now headed to a track in Singapore, which he never won. If he breaks through again, with McLaren not able to come up with the answers again, he may have a chance in a title fight, and McLaren may have to prioritize one of their drivers sooner rather than later in order for the World Drivers' Championship not to slip away. We may end up with the champion driver being decided in Abu Dhabi, which may bring some painful memories of Abu Dhabi 2021. Aaron,
I just
do you
can't. I
agree?
can't. I'm not prepared or willing to go through that drama again. Although your point about McLaren having to prioritize one of their drivers sooner than later is going to be very fascinating to track
They
because
won't.
they
That's the
won't.
drama.
That's what I was going to say. They will not do it. I mean, they almost forego the Constructors' Championship last year and their mismanagement and stupidity. So I hope it doesn't get that interesting.
Chances are it won't, but I do think Singapore is going to be so telling because it's definitely one of Red Bull's worst tracks. Max has never won. And even though he came in second last year, Lando Norris was so ahead of him.
Decisive. That was
Yeah.
decisive on.
I just remember that Oscar also didn't do that great. So even though he was on the podium, so at least if he should definitely make it back on there. But I just feel McLaren has to stamp out any hope that Max may be feeling that he can make up the difference.
I agree. I saw somewhere, or you told me that he would have to win every race here on out and every sprint.
But only if Lando Norris is in second in all of them and Oscar Piastri is third. If they're lower than that, he has more options.
Well, They're giving him options after
Oh, yes.
Baku. So let's hope they put a halt on that one really quickly. But thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite Baku crasher. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.